Hello, my name is Dario Balca, student coordinator for the Peter A. Allard School of Law History Project. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge that UBC's Vancouver Point Grey campus is situated on the traditional, ancestral, unceded territory of the Musqueam people. For those listening to this recording outside this area, I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners and caretakers of those lands. Lorna Strong's story is one of hard work, open-mindedness, and adaptability. She entered law school as the mother of two young children, and despite the challenges she faced in balancing the rigor of law school with parenthood, she took the challenge head-on. Lorna graduated in 1995 and has spent nearly the last 20 years with HSBC. She's now based in the UK, where she manages the legal counsel team that advises HSBC Global Trade. It's August 19th, 2020, and she joins me today to reflect on her time in law school and the accomplished career that ensued. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So Lorna, you went to law school after earning an applied sciences degree in nursing from UBC and practicing as a nurse for a few years. That might seem like somewhat of a drastic change of course in terms of your career. Can you tell me about what inspired you to go to law school?
Well, to tell you the truth, when I graduated from high school, I think law school was one thing that was in my mind. And I started doing an arts degree at UBC, but then had this idea I was going to travel around the world and, I don't know, do interesting things overseas. And suddenly, just on a whim, switched to applied science and nursing with that idea in mind. I'd moved out of home quite young and thought this would be a good practical degree to get. After my nursing degree, once again, I thought about law, but actually I got married and had kids. And it was in my mind all the time, but I never had the opportunity to pursue it. And at a certain point, I said to myself, you either do it now or you forget about this idea. And so wrote the LSAT and, you know, did well and then went from there. That's kind of it. So it was always in my mind.
As you just mentioned, you had two young children, two daughters at that time, which I at least these days is not especially common among law students. Can you talk about some of the challenges that you had entering law school and being a student and later the profession associated with that?
Certainly, I would say it was even more unusual then, probably. One of the first things, in those days, things weren't online, and so I think you had to apply by dropping off your application, or maybe I showed up at the school to ask questions, I can't remember. But when I did, the clerical staff basically told me I shouldn't bother. They said that there's no way you're going to be able to handle the workload. So there was various things like that thrown up. To discourage me, I would say, just because that's what people believed, that it would be impossible. It was challenging. I would say I was divorced from their dad at the time, and he actually shared in the raising of the children, so that did give me time. Certain nights I would, you know, pull an all-nighter while I didn't have the kids with me. But I was also very fortunate because when I went to law school, I thought I'd be a lot older than the other students. I was in my early 30s, and I wasn't. And I actually had a lot of acceptance from the other students, and they would pitch in once in a while. For example, one of my fond memories was playing intramurals in hockey, which I hadn't done before. And one of my fellow students took my kids to the game, and the kids had a lot of fun at the game and developed their own cheer, which we still remember now, which was go law, turn them into coleslaw. So it, I found that I was able to integrate sort of parenting with having sort of fun with my fellow students, and it was a great experience, but there were challenges. And even when I graduated, I didn't fit the mold of the new graduate, and I was lucky enough to obtain summers and articles, but interviews were sometimes a challenge. And despite I think it not being maybe proper, most people did ask me about my family situation and whether I thought I could actually handle a law practice with kids.
Yeah, I think parenthood is just one part of the many diverse experiences that people are coming to law school with. And I do think that some of these challenges that you've mentioned persist even now for people who have families or want to start families. And the idea of balancing law school and a legal career with that can be quite intimidating, I imagine.
You become very functional and good with time management.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, what advice would you have for people who are considering law school under those circumstances?
It is difficult. It's helpful to have some other either parent or maybe grandparents supportive. You do get better with managing your time. It's not prohibitive. It is a challenge, and it, I would say, positively impacts the children. They became friends with a lot of my friends, some of who, of course, hadn't had children yet, and so were quite interested. And it inspired them living at the university. We lived in family housing. And they both went on to do undergrad degrees from UBC and one a master's from UBC and one elsewhere. And I would say they have great memories of it, and they didn't feel sort of that they weren't given enough time or anything. It was a great experience for all of us. So, yeah.
And when it came to choosing a law school for you, other than the fact of being in Vancouver, was there anything else that made you pick Allard specifically, or that kept you here?
Somewhat logistics. That's the only place I could live with my circumstances at the time. So it was either, if I didn't get accepted to UBC, the chances of me going would have been very small. Yeah. So.
In my experience, those first few weeks of law school are pretty significant and meaningful experience. And a lot of things change and you realize that you're in this kind of new reality. I wonder what your first impressions of the school were.
Well, first of all, I think I remember the reading, you know, how hard the reading was at first, and so many things to read. First impressions, again, it was coming from a world where I had been sort of working in the workforce, and my primary thing was working, looking after the kids. It seemed like a fun holiday, to be honest. And it was really neat meeting other people who sort of were, I guess, intellectually sort of interested like I was. And really, it seemed to open so many doors. I did make the mistake of introducing myself to one of the profs, thinking they were a fellow student. And they were just a young prof, and I was an older student, I guess, slightly older student. But the friendships I made in law school, interesting enough, were almost primarily from my small group at the time, just because working together in that small group, we got to be very close. And when one of the things we did early on, of course, one of the things we did early on was, it was the era of referendums in Quebec about leaving Canada. And so one thing we did very early on was one of my fellow students got the idea that we should go and campaign at the Unity Rally in Montreal. So I think about five or six of us went down on a sort of double red eye weekend and did that. And that was extremely bonding event as well, right? Plus for a good cause.
It seems from our communication before this interview that you remember your time in law school overall quite fondly. You mentioned the Montreal rally just then. Are there any other memories that you can share with me that really stick out to you when you think back to that time?
Well, I guess the sports, as I said, campaigning, collaborating on study notes. We used to create these huge cans, as they were called. I think sharing some of the anxieties that you have with the pressure on grades and obtaining articles. And we also had, you know, the usual fun parties and various late night swimming escapades off the beaches of Vancouver. So that was also a lot of fun. Yeah.
In terms of your career, it doesn't seem like the path to where you are now was really a direct one. And you said it all started with you winning a prize in international law from Ladder Downs, as it was known then. I'm sorry if this is too broad a question, but I wonder if you can kind of walk me through the initial experiences you had in the legal profession and how those kind of led to one another and to where you are today.
Well, I think when you graduate from law school, often I think you have quite a narrow idea of what you want it to do, and because you don't really know what the practice of law will be. And my interest was, I think, in becoming a barrister, a litigator, and working at a law firm in Vancouver. That's kind of, that was it. That was my plan. I didn't really know much more. I'd taken an international law course and I won a very small prize for it. I think it was $100 from Ladner Downs, but that was good in those days. But I really didn't think about it as an area of law at all. I just had an interest in it. So kind of put that on the back burner. Because I was a nurse in the past, because I had a healthcare background, I was offered summers and articles at Harper Gray Easton, a firm that focuses on medical and insurance law and litigation. So that was sort of seemed to be the right place for me. But while I was there, I was very fortunate enough to work on an international commercial arbitration under actually the Japan arbitration rules. And I even worked on that, I think, over a year, a couple of years. And my interest in business law suddenly was ignited. I absolutely loved working on it. I loved all the complex relationships. And suddenly health law didn't seem at all interesting to me. After I articled, I moved to a small boutique firm called Getz Prince Wells, which a very senior counsel there. But I focused, I was hired to help them in their litigation practice with securities law. And that was a great experience. But again, after a couple of years there, didn't seem the right fit. And I wanted a more solicitor-based practice. But this was literally at the time when there was the dot-com crash and nobody was hiring solicitor lawyers. There were very few opportunities out there. So I had, I think, gone through a headhunter and ultimately was offered a role at HSBC Canada. And I was somewhat horrified that this was sort of maybe one of my only viable offers because I didn't want to work for a bank. I didn't want to work in-house. It seemed very foreign, and it actually seemed like maybe it would ruin my career. So I told myself, okay, I'll do this for a year or so, and then I'll see what else is out there. That was kind of my plan. But I joined the bank, and I've never looked back. It's been a fantastic experience, which is why I've stayed for 19 and a half years so far, although 13 in Canada and 6.5 in London, England right now. And I think primarily that's because I'm a curious person, and there's endless work there and endless experiences. When you work in a complex, large organization, there's always something new to deal with. The days can be extremely challenging. And some days I've felt like walking out the door, but I've never had a boring day. And that's really important. I've had, like I say, difficult days, but I've never had a day where I'm bored. There's absolutely something new, something challenging, and something interesting every single day. And to be able to say that for 19 and a half years, I think is a pretty good comment on that, right? So. And again, opportunities. I've advised almost every area of the bank, whether that's in managing their litigation, commercial banking deals, regulatory matters, human resources, money laundering, fraud, and most recently, international trade finance. So again, a lot. It's been a great kind of thing. Yeah. Maybe that doesn't tell me how I ended up there, but that tells you how I ended up at least starting there. And it doesn't maybe tell you where I am now, why.
Yeah, well, I mean, could you tell me a bit about, more specifically about what your work looks like these days?
Well, right now I've got a job where I'm basically the lead lawyer globally at HSBC Group for the area of trade finance. So financing international trade, essentially. And it's somewhat random how I ended up there. It's quite a specialized role. But in about 2006 or so, I started to develop an interest in it, mainly because we had some litigation in Canada, and I think it was in Asia, to do with a letter of credit, which is a trade finance vehicle. And didn't know much about it, and tried to find someone to help me with it, even in the external industry, law firms. And there's quite limited experience in that, surprisingly, in Canadian law firms. You think because we're a big trading nation, they would know that, but no. And there's also not a lot of literature in the area. So I relied actually heavily on those people, the business colleagues and operational colleagues who knew how things worked, but might not know the legal rationale behind it. So I would just add my legal lens and kind of wing it to a point. Within a few years, actually, someone on my team found a seminar down in Florida and they suggested I go attend. They said, hey, you might be interested. So I went down there. And it was really eye-opening. I thought, wow, there's people that know about this stuff, and there's rules, and there's things I didn't know about. And that was in 2009, and things just took off from there. And basically within 5 years, I was hired into what's recognized as the top legal role in trade finance globally, which is pretty fast. So, and I think, you know, often people sort of say, wow, how did you do that? You know, and I think partially because I took every opportunity that came my way in that time. I always tell my staff and other people that you learn by saying yes to work even if you don't know how to do it, and just doing it, right? So I took any work that came my way in this area and speaking opportunities that came my way too, which was really important. So I think my networking helped, my ability to network, and of course, sort of my Canadian friendliness and sociability, and the ability to bridge gaps between differences and to create sort of a community helped. I mean, for example, I was in a situation one time where I had lawyers from Europe and lawyers from the US fighting on a certain point of law in an international policy development thing, and neither would talk to each other anymore. They were so upset. So they'd be sending me emails and I'd then talk to the other side. I was like the mediator. So that also helped make connections, right? Mm. So right now then, being the lead lawyer for trade, I manage the legal counsel worldwide that advise our trade finance business. And it's a big business. It facilitates about $740 billion of trade worldwide each year. Much of the job involves problem solving and policy development, but also the use of development of innovative technologies and things like that to help in trade.
I wonder, I think for a lot of law students, are the way that we think about the law is, and that we're taught the law, in large part, is still very domestic. I wonder if you could tell me a bit about what some of the challenges are, and also what you maybe enjoy about operating at such a global level and what you do.
Well, I think actually I benefited. HSBC is centered in England and the UK, and there's definitely some sort of centric ideas there. So being from, say, the colonies helped me because I felt more akin to some of the other countries that make up part of the group. So I understood that of not being in the center of things, right? And I understood, frankly, based on experience of having two different laws in Canada, Quebec civil law, common law, that laws are different. And that sounds like a funny comment, but if you've been raised in a very powerful legal area, like say the law of England and Wales, sometimes you don't think that way, right? So that was helpful. So to understand that there are differences in laws and that I had to find out what the law was locally and how it worked locally. So that's a challenge. And like I say, a lot of it's about team building and about understanding differences. One of the things that's challenging, but I also really enjoy it, is the fact that you don't operate in a pure sort of legal sense, that you have to understand what the political and economic realities are because they impact trade significantly. So I'm very attuned to what's going on locally as they unfold. As an example, with COVID, I was dealing with COVID the first day courier service was disrupted in Wuhan in January 2020. And that only expanded as the virus moved around the world. So you're right in there, right when things get started, right? So what's happening on the ground is really important, and what's brewing. And this is the part I like. In any one day, I may have the opportunity to hear about sort of the impact of a natural disaster in one country, a currency control problem in another country, or a political issue that's about to blow up. And often I start my calls with my staff or with my business partners saying, what's happening? What's on the ground? You know, what's going on? And it's so I'm in an enviable position that I have a good sort of finger on the what's going on around the world. So that's really interesting. I really like that. And also, again, the friendships and I've made worldwide, yeah, which is really nice. Mm. And I used to get to travel before COVID.
Right.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
One of your most recent accomplishments is being involved in an advisory capacity in the first trade finance blockchain transactions to be undertaken globally. I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about kind of what that technology is about and why this is significant from your perspective as a lawyer.
Sure. Well, first of all, international trade is very paper-based. To this day, when you're sending goods overseas, you need to send things like a paper invoice, bills of lading, bills of exchange, shipping documents. So obviously it's complex, it's slow. And if you can imagine, if couriers aren't working, it's fatal sometimes. So blockchain, the idea with blockchain is it's digital and it's an electronic ledger that can't be adjusted. So instead of, for example, using an invoice or showing that something had been loaded on board a boat with the bill of lading, you could use this blockchain to show the flow of where things went and what was approved or not. That's basically the idea of it. How did I get involved? Someone came over to my desk one day and said they were going to issue a press release about blockchain, about something we were going to do. And I thought, I don't even want to get involved in this, right? And but I sort of asked, have we promised anything? And they said no. And I said, okay, go for it. And then what happened is various consortiums were developed with banks wanting to develop some sort of way to use this in trade finance. So aside from figuring out how they could do this electronically, it was in our hands to decide how we would characterize this as a legal transaction and how we would sort of protect all the parties' interests. I mean, what was this that we were doing and where did it fit? So that was really challenging, to come up with terms that would govern this, essentially, where it had never been done before. So that was really neat. It was really neat because, you know, I'm not what we'd call a digital lawyer. And I worked with other counsel who likewise weren't digital lawyers, but we now all call ourselves digital lawyers because we were able to figure it out. And a lot, frankly, in the digital world has to do with data and how you use data, how you control data and privacy and stuff. So it's very interesting. It's got a lot more work needed in that area, but it was neat to be at the beginning of it, right? And to have that influence. So on it.
I wanted to talk about a little bit about your ongoing involvement with the law school. You provided some of the seed funding for the 75th anniversary, UK alumni bursary, which is one of the school's forms of student financial aid. Can you tell me a little bit more about what the bursary is and who it's trying to help, and maybe why you felt that it was important for you to be involved?
Well, I guess I've been fortunate because the dean has in the past come to London sort of maybe once a year or something. So I've met up with her in the past and started talking about 75th anniversary plans. And one thing was to try to build a stronger alumni network in the UK. Because there are a number of alumni here, but also to find a way that we could have an impact on the law school. And I think the suggestion was made that maybe there should be a bursary. So I was quite keen on that and provided a small amount of seed funding. And the idea, and it was important to me, was that this would help financially a student that needed financial aid, essentially. And it was important to me because certainly when I went to law school, it was financially challenging, and it's probably no easier today, probably even more difficult, right? And it's very important to me that our law school retain a diverse group of students. As I've said, I think I'm a very good argument that it's very difficult to imagine upon a student's admission how they're going to contribute to the legal world. Who would have thought a nurse who had two small children and at the time lived on a very small island would ever be leading the way in blockchain, you know, in trade finance, right? So you can't tell where someone is going to go. And I think it's important that we have diversity in our student body also because, well, diversity has just been shown to create success, right? So hence, that's the background of the bursary. And that's why I got involved in it. And I'm very much encouraging other people to support it, right? So, and support similar bursaries that I understand are being developed with the 75th anniversary in mind. We were also supposed to have a celebration in London, but that got postponed or maybe canceled due to COVID.
So. Yeah, that and everything else, eh?
Yeah.
Working in-house, I think, is not something that many law students consider at first. Certainly in here in Vancouver, it's not, I guess, the traditional career path that you see out of law school. A lot of people think there's kind of the OCI cycle and big firm jobs downtown. As someone who's worked as corporate counsel, I wonder what message you'd share with those students about what you do and why it's something that's definitely worth considering.
Well, certainly I had that view. I didn't want to go in-house. I actually thought it was somewhat of a smaller career or somehow not being a lawyer yet. And I don't think I had ever met anyone who worked in-house even by the time I'd graduated. And I would say in somewhat the opposite. It's because of all the work that's there, you have a lot of ability to move around and to do different things. It's extremely satisfying to work with the business, to build it and to problem solve rather than just sort of, you know, doing your memo and giving it to the business as an external lawyer or fixing their issues. The challenge is, of course, is that your clients are working right there with you, so you don't get to separate from them. Or, you know, sometimes, and we work in an open area office, they walk over anytime they want. And so that's really challenging. But I think the opportunities are much broader than we'd ever imagine. And I think people should consider it a little bit more than they do. It's probably challenging because in Vancouver, we don't have as many large corporations or international corporations as some other cities, but maybe that's changing because we've got companies like Microsoft moving in. But not just the big companies, I think even small companies can be really interesting, right? And if you at all have an interest in business, it's a great way to satisfy that interest as well.
Relatedly, I mean, if there was a student who said to you, I'm specifically looking for a career in that kind of practice without wanting to lump all in-house roles together, I'm sure they're very different from one another. But generally speaking, do you have any advice for someone in that position in terms of what they should be doing during law school or as they transition into the profession that can help them land those kinds of jobs as opposed to with a private firm?
I do think having some experience in a private law firm helps. So I think even if you want to go in-house, it's probably good to try to get a few years at a law firm. Sometimes that's all about quality of work as well, because when you're in-house, you often have such volume of work and your clients do not expect perfection like they would from an external law firm. So you have to put out work that sometimes is not perfect from a sort of language point of view or what have you. And I think it's good to have the rigorous training in a law firm if you can get it first. I would say that. You'd want to look at the company you're going into. You'd want to know that you feel that it is ethically aligned with how you want to practice, and also that there is a respect for counsel and for sort of the risk stewards as we are now. And you want to look at sort of the basics of where you want to live and where you might want to go. When I talk about international corporations, of course, that opens up the whole world or a lot of the world to where you might want to go. Whereas a smaller corporation, maybe you're getting into an industry, but you might have more limitations as to moving and that type of thing, right? So,
yeah. I thought one interesting thing was the way that you described your approach to new opportunities and having this mentality of saying yes as much as possible. And I was wondering if you can elaborate a little bit on kind of what you mean by that and how you've benefited from it.
Well, I guess I always say again that you learn by doing, and that's the best way, or you get opportunities by doing. And I often talk to more junior lawyers now, even like in-house, that'll say, oh, I really wish I could learn about that, but nobody has given me the opportunity. But then you'll think, okay, well, someone asked you to help them with that project last year and you said you were too busy, right? And so sort of anytime there's a little tiny even opportunity to do something different than you're doing now, you should take it, right? We all get opportunities like that. And I think sometimes also actually, and I'll say this sort of as a woman, we're told that women often self-select out. So an opportunity comes around and they think, well, I'm not really qualified. I don't think I should do that. And so luckily I don't seem to have that problem, or not as much, in that I've just thought, okay, I'll just go for it. As an example, my first speaking engagement came about partially because of my own efforts. I wanted to go back to the same trade finance seminar that I had attended the first time. And I was told we didn't have the budget. So I called the organizer and I said, can you put me on one of your panels? And these panels, some of them were very light. They just talked about case law, lawyers and case law. So he said, sure. So then I went back to my boss and said, well, they've invited me to be on the panel, you know, so, so then they approved the budget. So that sort of started things, because once I was on one panel, I got asked again to another panel. And you could say, was I nervous? Yes, I sat there with some very senior lawyers on that panel, international lawyers, and I panicked. And I had one case to talk about, and I think it was a panel of about 10 lawyers. And time ran out, and I think my only word on the panel was yes to some other comment. I said nothing else. But surprisingly, some of the senior lawyers that had been doing that for years, I could see were also very nervous. So I realized it's just something that you get nerves when you do public speaking. Right. So I hope that gives you an idea.
It's a great example. Yeah, for sure. Another thing I wanted to circle back, and I think you mentioned this earlier, is that you attribute part of your success to your ability to make connections. And I think that as a law student, it's immediately clear, very, very early on, it becomes clear that's a really essential part of the practice of law and of being successful. But I don't think it's immediately clear to people how you go about doing that. It's just not an obvious thing. I wonder if you can share some of your insight about how that's done and kind of how it works from your perspective.
Well, I guess you want to attend every sort of law firm event you can, even though sometimes it'll be quite limiting. I mean, I remember when we were looking for summers and articles, law firms would have wine and cheese. And I think I even went to the one in Kelowna, although I had no interest in ever working in Kelowna, but, you know, just to see what was happening. Talking to people, being interested in other people, inviting people to things. I've actually held social events even at my house and invited colleagues who I didn't know well, you know, just anything like that. So taking part, going out. There's a book called Black Swan, which is by an economist, and it talks about randomness in life. And he says that he encourages his grad students to go to any cocktail party they can find, because you make those connections randomly. So it's hard to plan. You just have to be out there. And if you're not a social person, that's going to be harder to do, but you need to put yourself out there. It's funny because last year I saw sort of the opposite example of this. I was at a law firm event, and now I am a senior client or representative of senior client at the event. And it was actually a quiet event, and it was a little bit boring, to be honest. But at one point, there was a couple of junior, either lawyers or trainee students, or trainee lawyers, as they call them here, that were at my table, and we were chatting a bit. And very quickly on, and they obviously worked together, they got into a personal conversation with each other about something that was going on personally with one of them. And it was fine, but I thought, gee, you know, here you've got the opportunity to talk to a representative, probably one of your biggest clients, and you've basically turned your back on me, you know, and I basically got up and left because it was boring for me. But those are the type of things that I think you need to be aware of when you go out and socialize. You have to be a bit strategic. When you're socializing at a work event, it's not a personal event. I guess I'd say it that way.
Another thing I wanted to ask you is maybe some of the things that you're passionate about outside of the law.
Let's see. Well, I do a lot of hiking, and I do love travel. So that kind of fits into my work. I also mentor a number of not just lawyers, but business people that I've come across. And I think part of that is some of it's been formal mentorship programs, but part of it, people have come to me. And when you're working in a fairly, I guess, traditional environment, and certainly working in London is a lot more traditional than, say, working in some places in Vancouver, people keep sort of the stiff upper lip. People are do not tend to be as friendly or reaching out or as collaborative. And I think because of my style, people have come to me to ask me if I can mentor them because they want to have more of that style and feel that it's effective, right? So, but I'm very passionate about that. And some of my mentees I've been mentoring for like 3 years or more, which is, they sort of develop into friendships. So that's good. And what else am I passionate about? Cycling, I guess. I can't think of anything else. And of course, still have a lot of fun with my daughters who are grown up, and both were living in London or Europe. One is back in Vancouver now. So that's been it.
I mean, I asked that question as though those things are separate from the law, but it strikes me that they're having those kinds of outside interests is actually a really important part of having a healthy relationship to the legal profession, perhaps.
Oh yeah, it's incredibly important. And certainly we're very much waiting for COVID to lighten up a bit so that we can get back to, you know, having our fun nights out in Soho and, and going to the races, which are also fun, you know, the horse races. So it's a little bit of a different thing here than in Canada.
Well, you've talked a lot about your kind of openness to new opportunities. In that spirit, is there anything else in terms of projects or roles that you're taking on in your future that you're excited about and would like to share?
That's a big question. I don't know. I guess I must say I'm happy in my job right now, but I'm always looking around the corner, what might be out there, right? And I think, frankly, as lawyers, we should always do that, right? And always think of what's the next step. The question would be, do I want to take this kind of experience and take it beyond banking and into some other industry? And there's a lot of my colleagues, including a fellow student, who are involved not just in law, but as executives in some of the biggest digital companies in the world. So that could be an area that I'd move into, but I guess we'll just see, right?
Well, thank you so much again for taking the time to do this. It's been really, really interesting.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.